Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
From the corner, Berry. Rick Berry has not missed the free throw against Washington. Now it is Berry. Back to Clifford Ray. Goes to Rick Berry.
Golden State getting that ball moving. Intended for Berry. Berry, look at that pass. Rick Berry, look at that shot, would you?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Berry wants to make a move. There's a Berry. He's got his shot.
Hey, everybody. Rick Berry here with the, that's right, the surf man himself is here with me, Cyrus Atchison. That's exactly right. And I dare you to try to spell his name correctly. It's not as bad as Krzyzewski, but it's a tough one.
It's up there.
Anyway, hope you've been good, Cyrus, and a lot of things going on in the world of basketball. I still get such a kick, not a kick, but it's almost humorous to me. All of these people coming up with these possible trades and doing this and doing that. I guess they don't have anything else meaningful to talk about. So they have to talk about bullshit that you don't even know is going to happen. And then, you know, speculate that this can happen, that can happen, this can happen. There's so many things involved in this. And then again, you know more about it than I do. And I admit I don't know about it. I don't want to know about it. Having to figure out the salary cap issues and all the other stuff that is involved. It becomes so convoluted. It's a waste of my freaking time. Let's talk about something that really means something. Let's talk about, you know, is Chris Paul going to help the Warriors out? Okay. Because he is definitely there. This is not something that people are speculating about. It really is humorous at a time, but I do think that he's going to have an opportunity to make the team really tough, because a key to success for any team is what's your bench like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just think about this. You're bringing in somebody of his caliber to possibly be the guy leading the second unit, and at times being on the floor with Steph Curry, which would free Steph up from having to bring the ball up and do those things. And he's so good moving without the basketball. I mean, the shots that Chris should be able to create for not only, you know, for Steph and the rest of the team, Clay and whatever. I mean, I'm excited about that aspect of it. I mean, I really am.
BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for all sports, including basketball, football, baseball, boxing, golf, hockey, soccer, and more. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code Believe, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, it's where the game starts.
So
absolutely,
it's going to be fun to see what happens, and then they want to go small. That could be very interesting with Chris Paul, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, right? Klay Thompson, and then, you know, and depending upon what they want to do, if they don't want to go with Looney, right? And they want to go with the shooting from the outside. You know, their new pickup, as you know, I'm trying to pronounce those guys' foreign names. I feel like Johnny Most. You heard the story about Johnny Most, didn't you, when he was doing?
No.
Johnny Most was a longtime broadcaster for the Boston Celtics. He was a chain smoker, had a voice like this, and Bird throws the ball, and Bird throws it to Johnson. And so he was doing the McDonald's, had the games before the season, and we go over it and broadcast some of that stuff when I was broadcasting. And they were doing a game with what I think was the Serbian team or whatever. And so Most didn't even take – he didn't even spend any time at all trying to learn how to pronounce the names, right? And the guy with the beard throws it to the guy with the mustache, and the guy with the mustache. I mean, it was the most hysterical. You have to look that up. I think it's on the internet.
I will.
Look it up. If you don't laugh at that, it was classic. It was absolutely classic. But was it, sir? So anyway, they can go with a team, you know, other than Draymond, who's not the three-point shooter, but they can go with a team that can shoot. And with Kuminga getting to be a pretty decent three-point shooter now as well in his athleticism, I mean, hell, you could even put Draymond on the green and go really small and have five guys out in the perimeter who could all shoot three-point shots at a pretty high efficiency from 35 and above. That would be interesting to see how a team would match up against that and how they would attack him. So there's just so many things that Steve is going to be able to do with the lineup that they have. And let's throw this in there now because we'll get to the questions from other people. So I don't have to, I don't want to, you know, like cover all their stuff because they have questions that I may answer.
Right, right.
Well, I get on talking. You think I'm bad now? I'm going on a cruise with my wife this fall. And I'm going to go over and I'm going to actually try to go and actually kiss the Blarney Stone. So if I can talk like this without having kissed the Blarney Stone in Ireland, which is supposed to, if you do that, you have the gift of the gab. Okay. I might be really dangerous when I come back from this trip if I kiss the Blarney Stone. So anyway, it's going to be fun to see see what happens. But I did watch and I saw some video of the Warriors and their pick and the other guy's second round pick. I like some of the stuff that I saw from him. Absolutely. I mean, really, he's athletic. I like that.
This is Dale Davis's kid you're referring to, right? This is Dale Davis's kid, Trace Jackson Davis.
Yeah, for sure.
Love it.
I liked what I saw. Now, of course, you know, they always pick the best stuff. But here's the deal. You still have to do it. Now, maybe you don't do it as often as you like a guy to do it, but he has the potential to do those kinds of things because it's there on video to see. So that's going to be fun to see how that plays itself out. So let's get, if you, why don't you add something if you want? Otherwise, let's get to the questions.
The only thing I wanted to add, and I'd love your perspective on this, and I want to add this because it's not really discussed that much, is the fact that Chris Paul has been revered for over a decade. I mean, since the beginning of his playing career as a leader. Like you hear Charles Barkley on a Inside the NBA always call, and it's become like a running joke at this point, but he always calls Chris Paul like the greatest leader in the NBA. But I mean, the Warriors now have, you know, this incredible leader. What does that mean to you? And does that conflict with Draymond and Steph and Kerr? Because he's vocal and he likes to run things his way. Will there be a conflict there? And just what are your thoughts on adding this personality in Chris Paul to the dynamic?
Well, I don't think it'll be a problem with Steph. I mean, look what Steph did. Steph was deferred to KD, you know. I mean, two-time MVP. I mean, so no problem with him. I don't think Clay is that type of a guy. Clay's smart enough to know, this guy's going to get me a lot of good shots, you know.
Right. So
why would you be upset with him? The only guy that, you know, might take an offense to it because he even mentioned about it because he never was a fan of Chris Paul is Draymond. And why he even came out and said that publicly, I don't know. Why would you even bring that up, Draymond? My God, that's between you and him and the team. Work it out amongst yourselves. You know, don't air your dirty freaking laundry.
Right.
Okay? You know? Anyway, but that's Draymond. I mean, that's the way he is. I mean, Draymond is the way I used to be, and at times I still am. And my wife said, honey, what goes in your brain doesn't necessarily have to come out of your mouth. Do you need to have a filter?
Yes.
Filter it. Draymond has no filter, okay? So we have to accept that and understand that. And so I'm sure they're going to work it out. I mean, why would you do anything to jeopardize having somebody like that, you know, fit in and be an integral part of your team's success, because that's what it's all about. I tell people all the time, and I've talked to some teams before, in fact, some of the Warrior teams, if you want to make it work this season, take your ego and put it in the closet until the season's over. It's not about you anymore. It's now about the team. What can you do to help this team be successful? And if it requires some sacrifice on your part, obviously you should be prepared and willing to do that. And if it is an issue or something, then you don't talk to the press about it. You go into Steve Kerr and you sit down with him and you express your thoughts and your ideas or your concerns and you work it out internally. That's the way it needs to be handled. So,
agreed. Are you ready to get to the listeners?
Let's get to some of these questions so that we probably already answered a bunch of them.
Maybe not. I like your strategy of getting into these sooner so there's no redundancies. Here is Craig from Pleasanton.
Hey, Rick. This is Craig from Pleasanton. Steph Curry just named his all-time NBA starting five, which was Magic, Jordan, Shaq, Kobe, and Duncan. I'm surprised that he had Duncan over Bill Russell or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. If you had to choose, what would be your NBA starting five of all time?
And Rick, just to add to that real fast, and sorry to interrupt, but Stephen Curry originally listed Larry Bird, and then he backtracked, took Bird out, and put Kobe in as his three. That's all. Okay, go ahead.
Interesting. Well, you know, a lot of these guys haven't really seen people, and you know, Steve Kerr the same way. And there's no way you know, and I have great respect. Shaq was the most dominant player during his time, one of the great players of all time. Would I love to be a teammate of his? Absolutely. But would I pick him over Wilt Chamberlain? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Seriously. I mean, there isn't any comparison as far as I'm concerned. I mean,
right.
I've watched these guys and I played against one of them. I mean, the stuff that Wilt did is just ridiculous. So it's pretty hard to leave him off. And, you know, I think he's probably picking. He seemed like he was picking by different positions, power forward or what have you.
Correct.
For me,
correct.
I would take the luxury of making a change, and I take Bill Russell as my power forward because I don't care if he scores a point. I don't need him to score 1 point.
Correct.
Okay. I have Wilt, who averaged 50. I'm going to have Michael, who can average 40, get 40 or 50, 48 anytime. You know, I mean, and so I'm playing on this team. You know, I'm not playing with Bird. I'm playing, you know, forget Bird. I'll take Bird's place. I'm playing. Okay, I want, and these are the four guys I would play with. I would want to have Wilt at center, Bill Russell at power forward. I would play the three. I take Michael at the two, and the most difficult one of all is the point guard position. Mm-hmm. It's pretty hard, not to say Magic and all, but here's the deal. In today's game, if we're playing with the 3-point shot, how do I not take Steph Curry?
Right.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, the greatest shooter from 3-point range, and with all those other guys, I mean, come on. I mean. I'm taking Steph Curry. I'm sorry. I'm just such a big Steph Curry fan. And on that team, Steph Curry would be insane. I mean, it would be ridiculous. And I would defy anybody to think they're going to go in and get an easy, uncontested layup at any time and drive from 30 feet out like you see happen sometimes and dunk the ball. With Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain in there, that's just not happening, folks. It's not happening. And all the guys that were mentioned are all great players. And would I love to be a teammate of Tim Duncan's? Absolutely, I would. You know, Kobe Bryant. Love Kobe. You know what a big fan I've been of Kobe Bryant. And, you know, I knew him. Such a tragic loss. You know, but I love Kobe. Would I love to have played with Kobe Bryant? Absolutely, I would. So, you know, this is all stuff. But that's what I pick. Those are the four guys I would want to play with. And then I would be happy to play against any other five people want to put on the floor.
I love it. And just to recap. So the Rick Barry starting five is Wilt Chamberlain as your center. Bill Russell as your power forward, you as a small forward, Michael Jordan, Stephen Curry.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. There you go. Here is Greg.
Mr. Barry, with the mix of players that the Warriors now have, who on that team from last year will have to change their role to make that team go this year?
It depends upon who he decides on, you know, starting, whether he's going to have people off the bench or not. Probably Kuminga is going to have to. Kuminga was coming along. I think of all the things that happened with the team in the playoffs, the most surprising thing was to me is how Kuminga didn't get to play because he really was making advancements. His 3-point shooting was up over 35%. He's got athleticism. He can get to the basket. I'm hoping that this is a big breakout year, kind of what it was for Jordan Poole 2 seasons ago for Kuminga.
Right.
Because he's got, with his athleticism and, you know, learn, move like Steph, move without the ball. He's got players that will get the ball to him. Steph will do that as well.
Right.
So I'm hoping Kuminga will be the guy, and then hoping that, you know, the new additions to the team and the draft picks will be able to add something to it. But as far as any one guy, if I had to pick one guy, well, the other guy too, because he was didn't play hardly, and then he got to play more, is Moody.
Right.
You know?
Right. And he's awesome. So, I love Moody.
I would say those two guys need to, you know, take some steps forward, and you do what's required based upon how the team's playing.
Right.
And if they're playing, you know, those guys would be such a blessing for them. You know, for them to be on the court to be playing with CP3. I mean, my God, he can help them so much. And I'm sure he's going to give them advice and talk to them about things and see what they're doing or not doing. You know, on that play there, you don't want to make it. You missed it. You should have been a cut. You should have gone here. You really, it's kind of an ongoing learning experience when you're playing. And this is where the veteran players need to come through. You need to help these guys. You need to bring them along. You need to spoon feed them. You need to hold their hands at times. You need to bring it out. I'm telling you, back when I broadcast, I was shocked because they let the media into practices back then, and they stopped a lot of that now. Mm-hmm. But I would watch a team go out, and they're practicing, and they're scrimmaging, playing. And I'm watching so many things happening that were so many things that were wrong that the teams were doing as far as man-ball relationships and not screening off the boards, and they're still just playing. I'm going, what? When I coached, I blew my whistle every time. And I told, like, Clifford Ray, who was ever working with me stuff, if you see something happen that was the wrong thing, it was a mistake, blow the whistle. And the rule is, when the whistle is blown, you stop exactly where you are. And then I would stop and I'd go, Cyrus, what just happened? I want to know if you knew what the hell just happened.
I've had coaches like you, sir, who have done that.
Because it's a learning experience. You learn through the mistakes that you make. But if you don't know you're making a mistake, then how the hell are you improve on it?
Yep.
You're going to what? You're going to keep making the same damn mistake.
Yep.
So that's the part that I think is really critical for them to be able to talk to him. I remember, I tried to talk to Jamal. In fact, I used to joke with Jamal, who was Keith Wilkes at the time when he was a rookie. And I would guard him when we were practicing. My God, he would like make everything. I said, listen, Keith, here's the deal. When you play in the game, they have this thing about visualization and stuff. I said, not that I'm a big believer in all that crazy stuff, but I said, just visualize my face on your opponent, because if that's, you see that, you're going to be like, you never miss when I'm guarding.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Good call. Here is Nick Cohn, sir.
Do you see the Warriors making any more moves before the end of the offseason?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know the answer to it. I can call Mike Dunleavy Jr. and try to find out what's going on in his brain, but he seems to be doing some nice things. I would not be surprised. I really wouldn't. If there was a veteran or somebody out there that they thought could, bring some veteran experience to the table, that could happen. But right now, with the moves that they've made, I think this is a better basketball team than last year.
Oh, yeah.
By far. And now it all comes down to one thing. What commitment are the players going to make to being a great team, defensive team?
Right.
That's what it comes down to. It's not the individual defense. You don't win championships on individual defense. That's a bonus. If you got a good guy, make a guy work harder. You win with team defense.
Right.
Helping one another, rotations, understanding what's going on, screening guys off the boards, controlling your defensive boards, getting it out, running, filling the lanes, doing all the passing cuts, the stuff the Warriors do so well, have done so well over the years. And that's going to be the defining element, I think, to determine just how good a season they're going to have, along with being hopefully blessed with good health.
And just to add to that, Rick, and you're absolutely right. The Warriors are one of the few teams in the NBA that actually have not filled out their roster. And I've been saying that a possible strategy behind this move is waiting for the buyout market, because a player like JaVale McGee could potentially become available. And whereas a lot of other teams, their rosters are packed, they're set. The Warriors have, in theory, two roster spaces, so they could capitalize on that buyout market. So it is
possible. Maybe a smart move on their part, really, yes, to see what evolves. Because let's face it, people will go deep, but they're not going 14-15. Okay, the only time that's happened is if you got a bunch of injuries and guys move up the ladder a little bit, and maybe you're 10 or something. Because most teams only go 8-9. The Warriors, when they won in the first time after 40 years, they were went 10 deep, maybe 11, but now you have 15 guys. I mean, that's not going to happen. I mean, that's not realistic to think that that's going to happen, but you're absolutely right. So they have the flexibility and the freedom to be able to sit back and watch and see what transpires and what happens. I don't know what the rule is. I guess they have to have 15 players on 14. Their roster.
Because 14 is the 14 is the bare minimum. You have to have 14.
Oh, you have to. Because I know it's 15-man roster and two-way guys. So, but it's 14 is required. Okay.
Correct. And this year, a weird caveat is you can have 3 two-way players. They've added a third one for teams. But this part
is complex. Does that go to – so you can have 15 regular rosters and 3 on the two-ways?
Correct. But one caveat to that rule is if the NBA – if among the 30 NBA teams – if the average number of players on a roster dips below 14.5, meaning the majority of NBA teams are using that third two-way spot to not fill the 15th spot, then teams will be disallowed from having a third two-way player.
Jared, this is why I have you as a co-host, because I don't want to – that's the kind of minutiae stuff that I really don't give a rat's butt about.
It's new. That's new. That is very new.
Yeah, and that's why I have you to fill in. I don't want to be bothered with that stuff. I'm going to talk substantive stuff. I mean, this is the crazy. So, anyway, that shows you how nutty it is. So, let's get to the
nutty.
Next call.
It is nutty. Here's Jim Cleveland.
Hey, Rick, I was interested to find out how you ended up adopting the underhand shooting style. Was it something you were just having a mental block with the overhand style, or you just felt it was easier to make free throws underhand?
Okay. Well, that's been around forever. I've answered that question so many times. Let me push the button. Let me see here. Free throw answer. Okay. I didn't have a mental block. I mean, I was a scorer, not a great, great shooter. I was 75% or something from the free throw line. My dad is the one that got me to do it. Semi-pro player coach said, son, you could shoot better this way. I said, I don't want to do it because everybody's going to make fun of me. And he said, son, they can't make fun of you if you're making them. I'm going to do this really fast because I've said it so many times. And I said, oh, I don't know. So fortunately, he was relentless. I finally went and took time in the summer, worked on it before my junior or senior year in high school. Don't remember which year it was. Shot over 80% and just kept getting better. And then I wish I was smart enough to have made the change early in my career. But my last 6 years, I changed the technique a little bit, took the wrist out of it. My last 6 years, this is why I say I think I was the best free throw shooter. My last 6 years, I averaged over 92%. My last 2 years, I averaged over 94% shooting from the free throw line. And it's the only part of the game you can be selfish and help your team.
Yeah.
So there's the story in a nutshell.
There you go. The part you haven't really explained, though, your dad was a pro, a semi-pro himself?
He was a semi-pro player and coach.
For who? Was the NBA like around?
No, they had semi-pro. So guys would play and they would pay him. It was just, you know, like different leagues in the East and stuff. I mean, just was not
interesting.
It was no big deal. But it's a long, long time ago, Cyrus. So
yeah, well, I'd love to, maybe another show. I'd love to learn more about that. That's interesting. Here's a Rob Weber.
Hi, Rick. It's Rob from San Jose. I've seen Draymond's recent comments about his teammates. During your career, obviously, there was players you didn't get along with. But how did you make that work so that the team could be successful? Thanks.
I don't appreciate the obviously there. Yeah, I don't think it's obvious you haven't got along with people. Is that true? Did you not get along with people in the NBA? I haven't heard that.
I never had a serious issue with.
That's what I thought.
People.
Yeah,
I didn't have a lot of respect for some guys for various reasons or whatever. But as far as my teammates were concerned, hey, I didn't have to go to I didn't go to dinner with them or spend a lot of time off the court. But if we're on the court, I don't care if I hated the SOB, which was never the case that I hated a teammate. If he's open and has a better chance to score than I do, he's getting the ball from me.
Right.
No, because that's what it's about. It's about winning the game, regardless of who gets it done. As long as it gets done and it's on your side of the scoreboard, that's all that really freaking matters. And so you have to have the ability to not allow personal feelings affect the way that you deal with the situations that arise when you're on the court playing the game. As I say, I don't need to go to dinner with him. I don't have to visit him at his home. He doesn't have to come to my house. I don't have to sit next to him on the freaking plane or the bus. I mean, whatever. I mean, I could really not like him a lot, which I never really had someone that I felt that way about. But even if I did, it would be irrelevant. I mean, it wouldn't matter to me. Like, you know, even they say, like, you know, Dennis Rodman, all that stuff, putting up with, hey, I would have loved to have Dennis Rodman because he helped you win games. He rebounded. He played defense. You know, the biggest problem I had with him is that sometimes, you know, like when he put some of those wedding dresses on, he had the wrong color lipstick. It clashed. I just really, you know, what the hell is he doing? You know,
that was a rim shot there. I did for the listeners. Here's Greg. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, Rick, here's an off the wall question. When are we going to see mixed NBA? With the women's NBA hitting 27 out of 30, whereas Steph hits 21, surely we're going to have three-point line manned, staffed, whatever, by women, and let the men play bully ball down low. Am I crazy? Well, don't answer that question, but what do you think the chances are?
Well, I will answer that question. You're crazy if you think there's ever going to be a game where women and men are going to play together and against one another. That's never going to happen. And hey, you know, kudos to the young lady who did that. I mean, that's impressive. To miss only two, and I don't care what you're doing. That's great. She's not playing in the game with somebody guarding her, and she's not having to guard somebody. So that's never going to happen. So accept it for what it is. And women's basketball has come such a long way. My wife ran women's basketball for 12 years, and I've seen that game grow tremendously. You know, nobody dunked the ball back then. Nobody was taking jump shots back then.
Right.
I mean, it's come a long way. And I remember, because I'm old enough to do it, when I was growing up, women played half court only. three ladies played on one half, and the others, they never crossed half court, and they threw it over to the other team. So they had defenders and offensive players. You didn't know that, Cyrus.
I did not know that. What? I got to look that up.
Oh, yeah, go look that up. Yeah, it was crazy. Right. It was crazy. That back
this
when
wasn't
I was
during Lynn's playing days, was it? Like, they weren't doing that.
No. Lynn played regular. She was a scorer. She set all kinds of records scoring. Only women to have her jersey retired at her alma mater at Williams.
Right. So this
and,
is important.
And I'm proud of the fact that she, distinction, the only mother and son combination in the history of NCAA Division I basketball to have a mother be first-team academic All-America and have a son be first-team academic All-America. That was Lynn and Canyon. And Canyon actually got Academic Player of the Year. So, you know, I'm proud of that and happy for them that they were able to do that. But trust me, though, it's very difficult having two such so intelligent people around me all the time because they double-team me all the time.
Oh, you're challenged constantly, I'm sure. People don't realize this either. Yeah, let the audience know, what are Canyon's degrees in?
Yeah, well, he got his degree in physics, right? He was in the Honors College in physics, and he has his master's in nuclear engineering.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. He's
working for L3 Harris, a big engineering firm. They have a lot of top secret stuff in the government and what have you. And he's down in West Melbourne, Florida, and he works for them. They're kind enough to be allowing him to take some time off. He's taking vacation days to be playing on the 3x3 FIBA National Tour and the USA 3x3 National Team and hoping to hang in there. He came so close to being an Olympian 2 days before the last Olympics, and they were going to the qualifying tournament for 3x3. He slipped on the floor, tweaked his back, and couldn't play, and they missed by one game of making it to the Olympics. So now he's trying to see if he can play well enough and hang in there to hopefully maybe get chosen to play in next year's Olympics. So
he's on track, right? I mean, he's on the best U.S. team, correct?
Well, they have a number of people there. I mean, and then they'll have to do a selection thing. So there's no guarantees that he's going to get it. I mean, so he's just hoping that he'll have the opportunity to be on that team. It would be great because that was my biggest disappointment in my career is I missed out on being on the Olympic team. I thought I got, you know, shortchanged, as did a number of guys. I just talked actually to Wally Jones, you know, the fine player who was on the Philadelphia 76ers team. And, you know, he should have made it the way he played at the trials. A guy named Willie Morrell from K-State, same thing. John Thompson got screwed over and they didn't give him a chance to make it. I have a great story for that. that was unbelievable. I was on the team with John when we played in New York the last game of the trials. And this was quite a story. So, but I'm not one that I'm going to tell on the air. Anyway.
I was all ears. Here's Lee Stramboulos.
Hey, Rick. Even though he was limited in the summer league games, did anything stand out to you about Trace Jackson Davis? Thank you, Rick.
There you go. We talked a little bit about that. I got to see and I watched some video of him, and I think he does a lot of good things. I mean, he comes from a good bloodline. His dad was a hell of a nice player.
Yes, sir.
And he's got some athleticism. I think with the proper tutelage and given the opportunity, I think he can be. I think he can be an addition to the team for next year and provide some. Some good minutes for him. I really do.
Well, I mean, and he, given he played all 4 years, I believe he's going to turn 24 this year. I mean, I was going to ask, I mean, you kind of answered it, but just to maybe add on to that, like, how big of a role can you see him playing? Like, could he be part of the rotation? Will it be garbage time?
It just depends on what he does at camp and what he does in the exhibition games. If you're given the opportunity to make the most of that, you know, I would tell him, go out there, be a really tough defender and team defense, be a weak side defender to come and help and protect the rim a little bit, make it a little bit tougher, focus on that. And then when the opportunities are there, you know, take advantage of the offensive opportunities that are there, you know, go attack the basket, finish strong. He's athletic. And, you know, just try to impress them. But first and foremost, focus on being a good individual defender, but more importantly, a great team defender. And I think that will get the attention of Steve Kerr and his staff more so. They don't need offense.
Okay? Right.
No, they got three guys that can get you 30 any night, right? On a regular basis, you know, Clay and Steph and CP3. But if he's
We haven't even talked about Wiggins. I haven't heard you mention
Wiggins. Yeah, that's another one. You can get you 30 points every night as well. I mean, so Wiggins is another guy that's going to be there. And so, yeah, I mean, that the problem's going to be for Kuminga is where is he going to get the time? You know, where's he going to get the minutes? That's going to be a tough one. I hope he doesn't get frustrated by it. I'm sure he was not thrilled about what happened in the playoffs. I mean, after playing the way he did and improving his game, and then all of a sudden not seeing the light of day very often.
Well, and the excuse is weird, Rick. I don't know. Like, the excuse from Kerr was that Kuminga basically plays the same position as Wiggins and Gary Payton II, so there was no room for him. I mean, my thinking of that is, why can't you play them all together? I mean, this is a positionless game. It was weird to me, the logic and reasoning behind it, but I'm with you that he's earned his place, and he's such a talented player. Would you agree? This is my sentiment. Let me know if you agree or disagree with this. That I think the Warriors, if they're going to be world champions this year, if they're going to actually reach that ultimate goal again, Kuminga's going to have to be a part of this. He's too valuable. His skill set is too good. He brings too much to the table, and his team lacks size and athleticism otherwise. He's one of the few young players on this team. I don't see how they could do it without him. Would you agree with that or no?
Well, I would think that he has to be, he should be, an important part of the success that they hopefully will have next season. Again, it just depends upon how well Wiggins is playing, obviously. Yeah. But then again, you can keep him fresh and do something, and, maybe Wiggins plays 28 minutes and Kuminga gets 20 and sometimes, 30 something between the two of them, because they're both, very similar in that regard. Keep them fresh, play really hard. The thing that was surprising last season with the playoffs was that Kuminga was shooting the ball, I think, over 35%
from 37. Three. Correct. Yes.
And Wiggins, when he got back from all the time that he missed, was terrible from 3-point range.
Correct.
I mean, terrible.
Awful.
Not bad, but just god awful.
Awful. Awful. Yes.
Hurt them some. So if that's the case, I just didn't understand why you wouldn't have given Kuminga some time, to see what he would be able to do. As I said, it's easy to sit around and second guess and everything. And, you're not there all the time. You don't know what's going on in practice. There's a lot of variables involved. And you have to then worry. You had to know, as a coach, you have to know the psyche of a guy. If I were to do this to him, can he handle it? Can he not handle it? How's he going to react to it? I mean, there's so much more involved in it than just, throwing a body in, throwing another body out. I had a tough decision last week in my big three game, coaching, which were hanging tough. We had a big win. Leandro Barbosa, who I love, former Warriors, Warrior player, and I took Leandro out in the second half of the game. He'd take a couple of tough shots and all, and he had been scoring some points. And it's just one of those things, I'm taking my guy who's like my best player out, right? I kind of felt like what Franklin Muley did to me in game 7 against the Bulls in 75 in the championship of the Western Conference. He took me out of the game because I was so freaking bad. Now, Leandro wasn't all that bad, but I just had a feeling and I wanted to get some minutes, and I put Dwan Summers in the game. Shit, Dwan Summers killed it.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, he knocked down threes. He played great. In fact, if it wasn't for him, we probably wouldn't have won. And then my other guy, Jalen Johnson, did a great job. He's 26. I can't believe that some team hasn't given this kid an opportunity, because he can pass the ball. He's got some talent. I mean, anyway, it is what it is. But we won the game, and so at least we're not going to be eliminated after our sixth game coming up in Boston this weekend. Even if we were to lose, which I hope we don't do, our record would still be good enough to not be one of the teams eliminated from the chase to get to the playoffs. So
good.
We'll see.
Awesome. Here's that's a great. And do you have information in terms of the big three, if people want to watch the ball?
Yeah, big three is on. You can see games. They stream the game. CBS carries sometimes two or three games on CBS on their network. And
Sundays normally? Is it Sundays when they broadcast them?
Or Saturday or Sundays. It depends.
Saturday, Sunday.
It'll be Sunday, this coming Sunday in Boston. And so you can do that. And, obviously tickets are available. They're not, it's not like going to an NBA game. So it's affordable for the people to be able to attend. We've had some, nice crowds, and the games have been extremely competitive. I mean, we've had really competitive games, I love my team. My guys have such a great attitude. Jody Meeks from Kentucky is there, and Jeff Ayers is my big guy. And then I've got Jalen Johnson, who's my other player, along with Leandro, and just good guys who never quit. And we stunk it up at the beginning. We couldn't put it in the ocean. Oh my God, we were down 9 points early. And then we just fought back, played some tough defense, and did a lot of really good things, and wound up, when we were down at halftime, wound up winning the game 50-42, based upon my guys playing hard. And we were tied at 50, at 40. We were tied at 40. So, but, the whole thing about that, when you're playing a game to 50, and that, hey, the team that's shooting the ball well is probably going to wind up winning, because you have to make shots. I mean, make shots. And
right.
The beauty of that game, I think Leandro made 2 threes, but he wasn't what he didn't have one of his best games at all. But Jody, who's my great 3-point shooter, he didn't shoot well. I think he only made 1 3-pointer. He didn't have a particularly good game shooting. So we weren't shooting all that well from the outside. My big guy, Jeff, who could shoot threes, a 7-footer, he couldn't make any. But, you know, we came through when we had to and did what you had to do. But that's why it's called a team.
Right.
Because people have to pick it up, you know, when the other guys aren't doing it. And my guys did. If it weren't for my two guys who didn't start the way that they played in that game, we don't win. And so that's the same thing that happens sometimes a lot with the Warriors when they were winning championships. They would be behind. They put the bench in. Hell, a lot of times the bench would get them back in the game. And then the other thing you want when you put your bench in, you want to hope that you keep your lead. Don't let the other team cut into it. If they just do that, they've done a great job, right? Just to hold fort, as they say. You know, just
absolutely
keep that lead. And the bench is a critical element to the success of any team, whether it's, you know, two guys in the five, you know, 3-on-3 game where you come off the bench, and or it's on an NBA team where you have a whole bunch of guys on the bench. And that's why it's up to the coach to make the decision as to, you know, who do you put in, when do you put them in, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Well, I'm looking at the standings right now. If you go to big3.com, your team, Rick, the Ball Hogs, you're in fifth. You're only a game back. You're doing good.
Well, we should be, because we actually had a game taken away from us, which is unfortunate. I mean, we lost a game. We were up 49-47 to a game to 50. The other team, we had 17 fouls called against us and 3 against the opposite.
Yeah, you mentioned that last show.
I mean, that's ridiculous. And then when you get a foul after 6, if they make the free throw, they get 2 points in the ball back. They did that 4 times. And then a guy made a bank shot off the glass to beat us. To get it, you know, go to 50-49, and we wound up losing in overtime by 2. But that's a game that was our game. It was one of those games that it wasn't called fairly, unfortunately. But hey, you got to live through it. And we did a lousy job giving too many offensive rebounds. If we had just controlled that part of what we could control, we still would have won the game despite the officials.
Right.
Because I don't generally will not blame a loss on officials, okay? Because there are things you could have done better to help you win the basketball game. So we could have won the other game we lost. It was really close going down the stretch. So we're very competitive, and hopefully we'll find a way to win this weekend and stay in the hunt and get to the playoffs. And it would be fun to get to the finals, because the finals are going to be in London.
Oh, wow. All right. Yeah. How many games in the season? Because right now your team is 3-2. Like, how many?
Yeah, well, we've got Boston, Charlotte, Detroit, and then the playoffs in Washington, D.C. So that'll be there. And then the teams go on to the finals in London the weekend after that.
And there's 12 teams in the league total. How many make the playoffs, the top 8?
Well, 2 are getting knocked out now this weekend. So we'll be down to 10. And then I would assume that after Charlotte, they're liable to knock it down even more after that, based upon the record. And then the same thing with the game up in Detroit to finally get to the guys that will probably be, you know, 4 teams will probably wind up going to D.C., have semifinals there, and then the finals the next week.
Wow. All right. Well, I mean, again, just check out big3.com. You can see the standings. Rick's Ball Hogs tied for second with a huge log jam. There's actually 1, 2, 3,
yep,
5 teams tied for second place at 3-2. Who are you playing this weekend? What's your
opponent? We're playing Bivouac.
Oh, Bivouac. Yeah, they're 2-3. Okay. All right. Who's on their team?
We got to try to beat them. But they're a good team. They've got some nice players, and we just
they got Gerald Green. I love that. Like, it's all these ex NBA players. Gerald Green, Corey Brewer is on their team. Ryan Hollins, who's been trying to make a name for himself in broadcasting, is on that team. And you're playing against Gary Payton's club.
Yeah.
Oh my God! All right, I'm checking this out. I love that. I'm in on the big3. I think
Well, Gary, I don't know. I think Gary might, something's happened. I don't think Gary's going to be there and all. But anyway,
why?
Hopefully we'll play well. He's got some commitment or something he's got to do. But anyway, hopefully we'll find a way to play well enough to win that game. We'll see.
I hope so too. Go ball.
All right. So anyway, it was good to catch up and talk. I hope everybody is having a good summer. I know it's been hot as could be here. That's why I'm up here in the mountains.
Oh, my God.
It might get up to 90 here during the course of the day, but it goes down into the, you know, certainly in the 60s, even sometimes to the high 50s. And so it's very tolerable. And there's no the humidity, as my father used to call it. I just went down to Miami. We had to do it. I came out of eating the restaurant with Rolando Riquetti, a guy that I did some work with for Lean Title Company, and his wife. And I walked out of the restaurant after we ate. Oh my God. The heat and humidity hit me. It was late at night. It was brutal. That's why I know what it's like down there. That's why, even though I'm a Florida resident and I spent a little over half the year there, I don't want to be down there this time of the year. It's
Did you hear what the ocean temperature is for the Florida coast?
No.
The water there, the hottest in history, it's 100 degrees. The
ocean what? Water.
Yes. Off the coast of Florida right now, it's like literally going into a jacuzzi. Insane. Yeah.
Unbelievable. So, that's
same Colorado right now. You're good.
All right. All the best to you. Take care, Cyrus. See everybody.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.